Well, interestingly, Steve, the new story is a great story of freedom for us. For this reason, it offers a new science that actually pulls the rug out under the conditional beliefs of a materialistic, genetically controlled biology. And it actually was precipitated by a very interesting giant project called the Human Genome Project. And the function of the Human Genome Project, ostensibly, it appeared to be a humanitarian effort. And what they told us, the scientists that were involved at the time, was that if we would make a list of all the genes that make up a human, which is called the genome, then we could take the genes that are in that list, and then by understanding which genes are in the body, adjust all those faults and problems and defects that affect us as in our health and our behavior. So they looked at the machine, said, yes, it's genetically controlled. All we need now is a list of all the genes that make up this body. And once we've identified each gene, then we could genetically engineer people into that utopian world of full health. Well, I love it because the universe is a great practical joker. And here's what the joke was all about. That, first of all, it was not a humanitarian project. The Human Genome Project was actually conceived by venture capitalists because they recognized that for every protein in the body, there must be a gene to program those proteins. And the proteins, as I said, provide for our physical and our behavioral traits. And they were expecting over 100,000 different proteins, may even be more than that. And they said, wait, that means there must be 100,000 genes. And what they put in their calculating mind was, if we do a Human Genome Project, we can identify 100,000 genes. What would that represent? 100,000 new drugs, because each gene would ultimately be used as a drug to help someone overcome a physical or behavioral problem in their lives. So the venture capitalists got all excited because they said, oh my God, 100,000 new drugs on the way. The joke to me is that they persuaded us that this was a humanitarian project. So the public actually paid for the research. And in the end, those venture capitalists actually patented every one of the genes that was found. So the genes that they found in the Human Genome Project are now owned by private industry. But then the cosmic joke, because the universe really, I didn't think, was wanting to see that work out that way. And here's what the joke was. So they do the Human Genome Project. They start this in the late 1980s. And by 2001, they create a very heroic effort of identifying every gene in the human body, which itself was a very successful conclusion to the Human Genome Project. The problem is when they finally got finished and tabulated all the genes, there were only about 23,000 genes. Well, this is a real big problem because they say, wait, a gene is needed to make a protein. There are over 300,000 proteins as actually estimated right now, and only 23,000 genes. That doesn't make any sense based on our genetic model of the universe. And all of a sudden, the whole foundation that genes control life was removed because basically there just weren't enough genes to make the model work. So the question is, well, what is coming from this understanding? And the answer is a new science, a new awareness of life. So to begin with, let's first go back and say, we looked at the human body as a physical machine, and the proteins were the little gears and nuts and bolts that put it all together. And we said that the proteins not only provide for the structure, but they provide for the behavior, because proteins move and change shape. And the movement and changing shape of proteins is translated into behavior. Well, in looking at what causes a protein to move, what causes a protein to engage in behavior, they found that proteins respond to signals from the environment. Well, in a Newtonian world, based on physical chemical body parts, the signals were also chemicals. So they said, yes, signals control the proteins. And when the behavior is off, then either the proteins are defective or the signals are defective. But this is then the foundation where the pharmaceutical industry came in and said, yes, signals are involved. We make signals. We call them drugs. So if you got something wrong with your behavior, we'll give you new signals to adjust your biology. Well, of course, that emphasized the nature of a material signal and a material drug. However, quantum physics started to put its funny little head into the picture and make weirdness of it, because it started to recognize that while we've focused on all the signals being chemicals, quantum mechanics research, biophysics using quantum mechanics, started to reveal that the proteins respond to signals all right, but they respond to the energetic, invisible signals more efficiently than they respond to the chemical signals. Invisible signals out of the immaterial field were controlling our biology. Well, this completely undermines the whole foundation of a chemical industry that sells drugs as signals. And we start to then introduce the nature of the field again, the invisible forces that are influencing us. Predominant in that field, of course, is the mind. And what was thrown out by Newtonian physics when they separated the mind and body and then focused on the body, quantum physics brought back together again. Quantum physics says, yes, there is a material body, but there's an immaterial mind. The mind is a field. The field is what ultimately influences that physical body. So just as much as a magnetic field can shape iron filings and cause the iron filings to create the structure of a magnetic field, we now recognize that the cells of the body are like iron filings, and the fields around the body are shaping that body, so that rather than trying to change the body with chemistry, it turns out that it's more effective to try to change the body with energy. And all of a sudden, the concept of the mind is influential because it's an energy in that realm that influences proteins is reintroduced into the story. So now we start to recognize that life is controlled by proteins and signals. We find that less than 5% of the population could say that any problem in their life is because of defective proteins. That means 95% or more of the population got here with an adequate set of genes to create a biology of proteins that would provide a healthy, happy, loving, harmonious existence. Well, then it says, well, if 95% of the people got here with a physical mechanism to provide for health, then where do all the sick people come from? And the answer is, well, the sick people, which are a large part of that 95%, are sick not because of their physical body, but because of the influences of the signals in their field. And again, it's not the focus on the physical signals, it's the influence of the invisible signals, their minds. But it also because, as Planck brought into quantum physics, that everything is entangled. So it's not just my mind that's creating and influencing my health. Steve, you're sitting next to me. Your mind is also influencing me. So all of a sudden, health is not located within an individual. It's how an individual fits into an environment. So we start to recognize our health is a reflection of how we fit into an environment. And since the beliefs that we've been entertaining so far in our myth perceptions are things that separate us from the environment, then you can understand why our health has been compromised by the myth perceptions that we have bought into. So, interestingly enough, a new science is coming to forefront right now. Well, we talk about the old science and emphasize what is called genetic control, which is the old belief, which simply, literally says control by genes. We recognize there are not enough genes to do that. There is now a new science which has been firmly established and is really making great advances in understanding our health and our lives on this planet. It's called epigenetic control. Well, the prefix epi means above. So when I say the word epidermis, I'm saying the layer above the dermis. So when I say epigenetic control, literally what I'm saying is control above the genes. And what we're beginning to find out now is that the environment, not just the physical one, and more importantly, the invisible environment, which includes our minds, represents the influence of epigenetic control. The signals from the environment alter our genes. That in fact, using epigenetic control, you can take one gene blueprint and modify it to create 30,000 different products. So that while we only have 23,000 genes, we also recognize you can make 30,000 variations on every one of those genes, and every one of those variations is influenced by the environment. All of a sudden it says, well, 95% of us got here with an appropriate set of genes to have a healthy, happy body. And what we have to recognize is, through epigenetic control, influences the environment, which are also emphasizing the nature of the field and the role of the mind, profoundly shape those genes and profoundly shape our lives. So basically, what we're beginning to find is the nature of how that mind, the conscious and the subconscious mind, through the energetic fields and through the signals the mind sends to the body, which are also chemical, through both the energy and chemical signals of the mind, we are shaping our biology. So we're not a victim of our genes as we presumed. Of course, again, let's acknowledge about 5%, actually less than 5% of the population, did arrive here with birth defects, with altered genes, which made an altered biology. Yet 95% of us don't have that excuse. That what we can say is that for the rest of us, our lives are not shaped by our genes. Our lives are shaped by our minds, which are perceptions and beliefs about the world that we come in. So therefore, a misbelief can cause a disease. So for example, when people believe cancer is running in the family, they have a belief that there's a physical gene that is running along that heredity that is causing a cancer. Well, we now know from studies where children are adopted into cancer families that when a child is adopted into a family, that child will get the same cancer as the family has at the same propensity as the family, and they're not even genetically connected. So the nature is, are we the victims of the genes or are we the victims of the belief about genes? And now, through the understanding of epigenetics and quantum physics, we're beginning to realize we are not genetic automatons. We are masters and creators and participants in the unfolding of our lives. We are not just victims where genes tell us who and what we are and compromise our lives. But by changing our beliefs, our perceptions and attitudes and responding to the environment in different ways, we can master our biology, master our lives, and take control once again.